Well, good evening. This is an interview for the Michigan Writer Series, Friday, September 27, 2002. I'm Stephanie Mattson, and tonight I'm speaking with Allison Swan, a writer and bookshop owner from Saugatuck, who earned her BA in English Literature here at MSU and went on to complete an MFA in Creative Writing at the University of Michigan, where then she taught for a few years. Welcome to the MSU Libraries, Allison.
Thank you, Stephanie.
A couple of years ago, in a review of Thomas Lynch's essay collection, Bodies in Motion and at Rest, you wrote, "I am one writer of poems who has come to see prose by poets as welcome antidote to the endless stream of books pouring out of New York, mostly, that clearly aren't by or for people who love language and the life of the mind it facilitates," unquote. Most writers agree it's difficult to write well in more than one genre, yet like Lynch, you write poetry and creative nonfiction. What are challenges you face in each, and do you have a preference for one over the other?
That's a big question. It's a good question, though. I'm actually happy to have a chance to think about it. Mm-hmm. I love writing, and I always have loved, as long as I can remember, I've loved writing and language. And so to me, it's all writing. And I've heard other writers make that same statement, that the different genres overlap so much more for me than not. Mm-hmm. And I know that in that review of Tom's book, I was referring to the extraordinary care with which he chooses the words, but not only for sense, but also for sensibility. Mm-hmm. When I write prose, the rhythm of the sentences is as important to me as the meaning that I'm conveying. And poetry gave me better training than anything I've ever done for writing prose, mm-hmm. that's musical, and that makes the best use of language that is possible. And language, like all media, is limited, but it can be pushed to amazing limits, and it's in poetry that you learn to do that.
Is poetry what you focused on when working on your MFA?
Yes, my MFA was in poetry. And in fact, until about 6 years ago, I wrote almost exclusively poetry. So I wrote poetry very, very seriously for about 20 years.
Wow.
And I've always been a big journal keeper, though.
Yes.
And journals I write my journals in prose. Mm-hmm. So I tend to discount that, but I probably shouldn't.
No way to get your thoughts down and then revisit certain topics later, mm-hmm. I suppose, mm-hmm. when you're writing your essays. Mm-hmm. And one of your poems, Porch Swing, was produced in 1997 as a broadside with photography and printing by book artist Jean Boischer. Did I pronounce her name correctly?
Okay. Yes.
Our special collections library owns a copy, as does U of M and the New York Public Library and other institutions. How did your collaboration with Ms. Boischer come about, and do you have any plans to work with her again?
Oh, Jean is an extraordinary artist, and she's a wonderful person, and I had the great pleasure to work with her at Chamandrum Bookshop in Ann Arbor for several years. And I think we were both just trying to figure out a way to work together, and I don't remember exactly how this particular project came about, except that Jean gave me a series of photographs that she had taken and told me she wanted to put them together with a poem in a book, and would I see if I might be able to write a poem in response to the photographs.
Oh, okay.
And she was...
So it's not the poem that came first.
No, the poem definitely didn't come first.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm in such awe of the books that she makes that mm-hmm. I almost feel like I feel honored that my poem is in her book, because it's a work of art. The book itself is a work of art. The interesting thing about that poem is that the poem... It was, of course, inspired by the whole series of photographs,
yes.
but it was most inspired by a photograph that wasn't used in the book and that she never planned to use in the book, but she showed it to me because it was part of the series.
Oh, okay.
And I've always been grateful to her because she clearly understands the way the writing process goes, or understands how similar it is to the visual art process, mm-hmm. because she was fantastic to work with.
Well, good.
On the...
And would you like to work with her again?
Yes, we tried.
Oh,
we,
well, good.
She gave me another batch of photographs a few years ago. I think it probably was a timing thing.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter is 3, and pretty much nothing that happened since then has... that's not true. I've done some really good writing projects, but for whatever reason, collaborating with Jean hasn't happened again.
Okay.
But I blame it a little bit on having been immersed in momness.
Sure.
For a while.
But you would like to work with her
yes.
again, if possible.
Yes.
Good. Now, your poem, The Dark Leap, Still a Girl, is part of a series of poems inspired by reading diaries and letters of 19th century Michigan women and girls. How and where did you find these diaries, and what led you to begin writing about them?
One of the things that motivates me as a writer is a desire to give voice to stories that I think need to be heard and may not have been heard before. Mm-hmm. Not just my own, but other people's, and that most often for me are the voices of women. When I was in the MFA program, I thought it would be interesting to spend time reading diaries and letters of 19th century Michigan women and just immerse myself in it and see what came of it. It ended up being an extraordinary experience. I literally spent dozens and dozens and dozens of hours reading the actual diaries and the actual letters mm-hmm. at the Bentley Historical Library and at U of M. And The Dark Leap, Still a Girl is very close to my heart because for some reason the manuscripts at the Bentley are stored in file boxes, mm-hmm. and they're cataloged on old-fashioned catalog cards, or at least they were still 10 years ago,
yes.
which I love. And nowhere on the catalog card that I found, labeling the box that I found her diary, and nowhere did her name appear. It was only her father's name. But something made me look at the box, and I don't remember what. I pulled the box off the shelf, and there were a series of manila folders all labeled with years, chronologically. And for some reason, I pulled each file folder out one by one, opened it up, and it was, you know, her father's journals. And about halfway through the box, I opened up a folder, and it was her diary. Mm-hmm. And it looked very different from her father's. It was smaller, and the handwriting was different. And I'm not a scholar, so I don't have that experience of that amazing experience of discovery on a yeah. regular basis. And so it was extraordinary for me. And then to make it more extraordinary, I started reading it, and the writing was beautiful. And she was just, I think, 14 yes. when she was writing it. And in hindsight, I realize now, at the time I was angry. I was angry that she had been merged essentially with her father's identity in the box and mm-hmm. the way that the file folders were stored. But in hindsight, I see now that someone saw the value of that diary and saved it and put it in that box, and that's what really matters, that it did still exist and it was there to find. Her name should be on the catalog card, of course.
Yes.
But at least the diary wasn't destroyed.
Well, how much of the diarist's prose is in these poems that you worked on? In The Dark Leap, for instance, the subject longs to expand her horizons, so to speak. The lines, "Oh, give me a horse to roam through the prairie grasses of the West where there are no men or folks. Let me taste something of the world." That's in parentheses, that stanza. And are those lines factual, or do you take poetic license with them?
Those are her exact words. Mm-hmm. And those words were not written in the bound diary. Those words were written on a piece of paper, folded up, and stuck in the diary. And that was another sublime moment for me in the process of reading the diaries, when I unfolded that piece of paper and read it and realized that someone thought that was important to save.
Yes.
Maybe it was that she did, and the diary was never opened, or it wasn't. But I tend to think that someone, maybe an ancestor, opened that piece of paper, mm-hmm. saw that was there, and realized it needed to stay with the diary.
And that was at the heart of the poem that you wrote, the essence of it, and mm-hmm. a very beautiful revelation.
Yes.
I was impressed when you just told me before our interview started that, you know, this 14-year-old girl actually wrote those
lines
herself.
And I have to
herself.
Say her name. Yes. I think we need to thank her.
Yes.
Her name was Isa H. Parker Smith, and she wrote those words sometime between 1869 and 1871.
Wow. It was really very nice. And it's good for you to have the opportunity to explore, you know, the writings, you know, 140 years old, mm-hmm. 130 years old.
Definitely.
Now, much of your work revolves around development, the tearing down of the old to build up the new. Examples are your poem Self-Serve about yet another strip mall, and your essay So This Is Progress, a story about the demolition of old buildings to make way for the construction of Comerica Park in Detroit. Do you think there's any happy medium when, as you point out in your essay, suburban sprawl is occurring at six times the rate of population growth? And what do you want your work to say about how you define your vision of the world?
A happy medium between...
Between, you know, having some progress, like, for instance, before this interview started, you said that, oh, you know, putting something like this online and using the technology to do so is good. You know, it's one of the upsides of computers and technology and progress. But then the downside is, you know, why you've gotten involved with saving the dunes at Saugatuck State Park because of encroaching expansion, you know, development, both commercial and residential and so forth, and fighting with people who want to take, you know, motorized vehicles into the park and so forth. I mean, so there's an upside and a downside. Is there any happy medium?
I think that what I am specifically concerned about is building that goes on with no master plan for community, with no community planning, and that is clearly not designed to last. In other words, disposable construction projects, apartment complexes that in 10 years are falling apart. That doesn't serve any good purpose that couldn't be served in another way. I think that building is necessary and new development is necessary, but quality is, you know, it's really simple math. We are, and now we're kind of veering off literary and getting more into current events.
Political.
Poetry
is political.
I do believe that. We can't keep going at the rate that we're going. We simply, our planet can't sustain what we're doing. So we have to make some changes. I mean, we do. And I can't think of a better way to sensitize people to the need to address that problem other than for people to spend time in wild places.
Yes.
And see what is there and why it's valuable and why we can't lose it.
Which was part of the subject of your poem, Tracing the Winter Dunes, or not your poem, sorry, but your essay, Tracing the Winter Dunes, that was included in Peninsula, that was published by the MSU Press a couple of years ago. Now, that is a story about snowshoeing through the Saugatuck State Park with your husband on your 35th birthday, but yet I read that as a metaphor for your decision to have a child. You know, you started at the beginning and wondering if you should, and then at the end you're still... You left the reader with, you know, you still weren't sure because you're not sure what kind of world you were bringing a child into. Do you think your daughter is going to inherit the good of the world, or do you hope, I mean, that you'll be able to share these things with her someday, the love of the natural world?
Well, here's the. It was Nordhaus Dunes Wilderness Area is where that essay was set, but there's reason you would know that.
Okay.
So
no.
It could very well, it could easily have been set in Saugatuck Dunes. The landscape is very similar. Nordhaus Wilderness Area is the same kind of landscape. The birth of Sophie, the arrival of Sophie in our life has been probably the single most powerful... it's very hard to explain how it changes one to have a child, but it's very positive in terms of the beauty that she shows me every day, and it's the beauty that's natural. It's all natural beauty. There's nothing artificial about it. You know, she doesn't care about fancy pillars on a library. She squats down on the sidewalk and watches an ant for 15 minutes. And I know that I'm going to be able to share with her my love of natural places, but she's showing me the wonder in an acorn.
And it goes both ways.
And it's very hard to be pessimistic when you're around children.
Yeah.
They have so much joy, and they find beauty everywhere. And so you see it too.
Have you been writing about that at all? Your new views of the world through your daughter's eyes.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
And because our series is called Michigan Writers, we typically ask our guests what living, working, or teaching in Michigan brings to their writing. However, since Michigan is usually the focus of your prose and poetry, I've modified that standard query a little. Having spent most of your life in Michigan, can you imagine ever living and writing elsewhere again? Because I know you've lived in Boston and Fort Lauderdale.
I can imagine it.
Oh, okay.
And it is very attractive sometimes. I'm a Westerner at heart, mm-hmm. I think. A friend of mine says, a friend of mine who's also from Michigan says that she's a better person in the West. She's more of the kind of person she wants to be when she's living in the West, meaning the Western U.S. But these are my people. Mm-hmm. This is my place in the world. And I think it's very important for me as a writer and also as a person to be in the place that defines who I am much more than any place else in the world. I can leave it, but I would be leaving a lot of myself that I, for whatever reason, can't seem to take with me. I need mm-hmm. to be here in the place to have it integrated into my life. And coming back to Michigan when I was 27 was very powerful and very important. I'd been gone for 4 years, and it felt so right, mm-hmm. and, although, you know, it's a difficult place to be a creative progressive person sometimes, especially these days.
Yeah. Okay. Well, in your bio, you noted that you are presently editing an anthology of women's creative nonfiction about the Great Lakes, and also writing a collection of essays about the Upper Peninsula, being a former UPer and, in fact, heading up there tomorrow.
Wonderful.
Please tell me about those projects, and when do you anticipate that they might be published?
The book, right now I'm talking to publishers for the anthology, of women's creative nonfiction, and I'm quite confident that it will be published. When is a little more,
sure.
if I end up publishing it with a university press, it will probably be a longer process than I would like, but that might also be the best place for the book to mm-hmm. be, is with the university press. So I would say people interested in looking at the collection, which is shaping up to be extraordinary, by the way. I have many pieces of creative nonfiction that were written specifically for this collection by well-published poets and fiction writers who wrote for me for this anthology.
Oh,
so I have a great
exciting.
Essay by Judith Minty, for example.
Oh, good, good, good. Yeah. She's read here for our series yeah. before.
And good. She should.
Yes.
And so I would say, fingers crossed, within the next year and a half.
Oh, good. Yeah. And then your collection of essays.
And the collection of essays, that'll be a little farther out.
Okay.
Let's see, Sophie Starts Kindergarten. No, I'm just kidding. But that will be, I would, a couple years at least before that.
Okay.
But I hope to start publishing the individual essays. One, the called Place of the Red Rock, is going mm-hmm. to appear in an anthology about Michigan natural areas.
Oh, wonderful.
Right.
And what place is that in the...
It's Little Presqu'île,
okay.
which is a wilderness island off the coast of Marquette County.
Mm-hmm. I'm very familiar with that.
Okay.
Just one last kind of fun question, that your summer vacation from writing for Ann Arbor's Current magazine just ended. So are you already looking forward to the reading you'll get to do next summer?
That is a fun question. You know, I love that column. I love doing mm-hmm. that column. I love Current magazine. I love the people there. I do enjoy the break in the summer, but I'm always really ready in the fall to get back to the writing assignments. My editor there is very flexible and lets me have a lot of say in what I read and what I write about. I just read My Own Country, which is the memoir by the AIDS doctor in mm-hmm. Eastern Tennessee, and it's an extraordinary wow. piece of creative nonfiction. There's so much creative nonfiction being published these days, much of which is not as carefully written as one would hope.
Yes.
And My Own Country is extraordinarily beautifully written.
Oh, good.
The author's name is, oh, how embarrassing.
Well, that's okay.
Abraham.
Readers can look
Abraham
it up.
Abraham Verghese.
Oh, okay.
Verghese.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the plug for that book. And thank you very much, Allison, for participating in the MSU Libraries Michigan Writers Series. And good luck with the event tonight.
It was my pleasure, Stephanie. Thank you.
Thanks.